Man, you know what happens this week? Like, technically tonight, actually.
It's fall.
No, that happens in, like, 3 weeks.
Lame.
Yeah, sorry. The Amazon Lord of the Rings show comes out.
Rings of Power. That's tonight?
Tonight. I mean, yeah, I'm a little weird. It was saying, like, Friday, but apparently it's... Spoilers. Yeah, the peep behind the curtain, today's Thursday. Supposedly it's premiering tonight. I won't watch it tonight because I have, you know, work to do and stuff, but I think we're going to watch it on Saturday. Very excited. Hopefully, I really hope it's good.
Oh, I was having a discussion with some coworkers today.
Yeah?
I was annoying some of them by... They were like...
As you do.
They were like... I made a comment about how I'm sort of confused because they already did the Lord of the Rings, so I don't know why they're doing it again. They're like, there's more to... It's not just... You know, it's not just Lord of the Rings, right?
And you were, like, you were knowingly ribbing them, surely.
I was... Yeah, no, I was okay, like... Good. What do you mean? There's Middle-earth only exists in the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, and they destroy, right? There's nothing else. Sauron, spoilers. So...
Yeah.
What else is there?
Famously, there's nothing else.
Well...
There's no other world building. There's no other, you know, movie franchise.
No. definitely not. You know, spoilers. Spoilers for the new show, actually. Not really. It takes place, as most people know, before Lord of the Rings. So, spoilers, Sauron isn't dead yet.
Is Legolas in it?
I would expect not. I don't think he was born yet. I don't know when exactly they're setting it in the second age, but I'm pretty sure he was born in the third age.
Oh.
Because he's not that old.
Do we see any characters?
Yeah, Galadriel's in there. I think Galadriel's like the main character, I think. From like the trailer I saw.
Think there's going to be good sword fights?
Look, man, if they're spending $1 billion on 2 seasons of a show,
it's got to be good sword fights.
I mean, you know, I was thinking about that earlier. I was like, you know, in my opinion, to make a really good Lord of the Rings thing, you kind of need to have that level of budget, right? Because, like, especially in my opinion, as long as you spend it on, like, practical effects and things like that, because, like, that's what makes the original one so good, in my opinion, is, like, the level of money and effort that went into making it all.
Like that every orc had their own special chainmail armor.
Exactly, right.
Yeah.
But I was also thinking, but also, that's not the only, like, you can't rely on just that. Like, hopefully, we don't know yet, I haven't seen it yet, but, you know, hopefully, you need a good writing, you need good plot, you need good characters, right? So, as long as they get those things there, I mean, the money won't be the issue with it, is all I'll say. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Do any of the ages have more magic than others?
Yeah, kind of the theme, or a theme, in The Lord of the Rings, in Tolkien's Legendarium, is that magic is continually getting weaker and weaker through time. Because it's meant to be our world, right? So there isn't any magic now. So the idea is that it started out very magical in the first age and then slowly diminished through the ages until modern day.
So we're going to be seeing medium magic.
Yeah, Second Age is interesting. Second Age, like I said, I've been kind of avoiding the trailers and stuff, so I don't know exactly what it's about. But the Second Age is the age where, like, Numenor collapsed and Sauron was kind of more powerful, right? I mean, presumably... So if you've seen Lord of the Rings movie, you know, the beginning scene where Sauron gets killed, or, you know, his ring gets cut off or whatever, that is the very end of the Second Age, beginning of the Third Age, when the ring is taken by the men and all that. So the Second Age is kind of Sauron in his prime, schmoozing people and betraying people age, when, you know, rings are being made and all that. So it should be really good. There's a lot of interesting things that happen in that age.
All right. Well, that's about enough for our Lord of the Rings corner this week.
That's probably true.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Reference Frames Podcast, the only podcast where you can combine both your love for physics and your love for movies into one nicely knit package.
Yeehaw.
My name is Ian. I am here, and this is my co-host, Will.
And I am here.
We've both made it today.
Nice.
And we can't wait to share our physics with you, dear viewer. Of course, as a podcast about science, we always start with anything we've gotten wrong, which most of the time is nothing.
And we never have anything. We're always flawless, so let's move on.
Always flawless. However, this time around, longtime contributor at Davey Nelly.
Davey Nelly, what have you done?
Says to us, you guys are bragging for corrections, so I'll help you out. In episode 13, Will referenced vocal folds as vibrating up and down. It would be more correct to say that they vibrate against each other, coming together and apart from the bottom up like a zipper repeatedly.
Well, darn. Yeah, I think that's probably correct. That sounds right to me. Thank you for the correction. I apologize for speaking out of turn. So this is why it's good to have listeners.
Extremely formal apology.
No, this is why it's good. That's why it's good to have listeners. Because sometimes I talk beyond my own field of expertise, right? Such as vocal folds. And I appreciate a listening audience that is paying attention to those kind of things.
And participate. So thank you, Davey Nelly, for correcting or expanding upon something we spoke about. If you want to correct something that we have to say, you are more than welcome to do it. Tweet at us at Podcast Frames. That's the best way to do it.
Please do.
End of story.
Now I'm all warmed up on these corrections. Keep them coming.
Hot dog. Well, we got no more today, so that's the end of the corrections corner. And out of corrections corner, then we go to our next phase of the episode, which is where, Will, you get to take the center stage.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to do that now?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
And lights, camera, action.
Nice. They climbed upwards a little. It seemed cold, and the noise of the stream had become faint. Then they were picked up and carried down, down many steps and round a corner. Suddenly, they heard the water again, loud now, rushing and splashing. All around them, it seemed, and they felt a fine rain upon their hands and cheeks. At last, they were set on their feet once more. For a moment, they stood so, half fearful, blindfold, not knowing where they were, and no one spoke. Then came the voice of Faramir, close behind. "Let them see," he said. The scarves were removed, and their hoods drawn back, and they blinked and gasped. They stood on a wet floor of polished stone, the doorstep, as it were, of a rough-hewn gate of rock opening dark behind them. But in front, a thin veil of water was hung, so near that Frodo could have put an outstretched arm into it. It faced westward. The level shafts of the setting sun beat upon it, and the red light was broken into many flickering beams of ever-changing color. It was as if they stood at the window of some elven tower, curtained with threaded jewels of silver and gold, and ruby, sapphire, and amethyst, all kindled with an unconsuming fire. Our first book quote. There we go.
Oh.
Isn't that great?
So nice.
I had you guessing there for the first paragraph, didn't I?
Yeah, you absolutely did, because you know I haven't read these books either.
It's true.
Wow. That writing is just so good.
Man. Tolkien, there's a reason he's my favorite author. It's just beautiful. Wow. So, Ian.
Okay.
This is from an excerpt from The Two Towers, book 4 of The Lord of the Rings. What do you think we're talking about today?
Polished stone.
Polished stone?
No, I'm just kidding. Oh. The big thing here is the water, right? Mm-hmm. Hanging in the water within arm's reach of Frodo. Spoilers.
Frodo back.
You don't think we're going to get through an episode without me saying that, do you?
Of course not. Of course not.
And the sunlight coming through
mm.
and shimmering like a plethora of jewels.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the direction we're going to go. I think we're going to talk about, you know, maybe, have we done refraction already? I don't remember if we've done refraction or not.
We did for Maz's
diffraction.
Principle. We did like mirages.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to talk about white light splitting. I think we're going to talk about the Pink Floyd effect.
Nice. Famously known as the Pink Floyd effect.
Famously known. Yeah.
You are 100% correct, Ian. We're talking about refraction and dispersion of light, which is that. Generally, you just call it chromatic dispersion when it's the Pink Floyd effect. But yeah, we're talking about how light splits. White light can split into multiple colors. All right, so we're going to talk about light, which is great. Disclaimer, there's a few of them. The first being, I'm not going to discuss magnetic fields here. They are also important. As we'll get into it, you know what I mean. But they aren't crucial to the discussion, to the explanation, so we're going to ignore magnetic fields for the moment, focus on electric fields fully. And second, there are some good videos that we'll have links to in the description. That discussed it in more detail, what we're talking about, and also explain some of the more commonly used explanations for this phenomena and why they're not actually correct, not fully explanatory or not sufficiently explanatory. So feel free to watch those if you're interested. They do a good job. There's a little bit of math in there, and I think it's a little too high for a general audience, but I think most of it is approachable. So that disclaimer's out of the way. Before we talk about light, as I alluded to earlier, let's quickly talk about electric fields and what they are and how they work. So, Ian.
Yes.
Let's imagine we're in a completely empty universe. There's nothing anywhere except for one little, small, tiny particle. All right? So let's flip a switch, and all of a sudden that particle was once neutral. Now it is electrically charged. Positively electrically charged, perhaps. Okay?
Okay.
Once you flip that switch, once that thing becomes charged, it begins to emanate or create or generate, whatever you want to say. It creates an electric field around it. And that electric field starts at the particle, and it begins to propagate as soon as you turn the charge on. And it propagates throughout the universe, throughout that whole big empty space, at the speed of light. Right? So you might say, how do we know this field exists? The reason we say that a field is there, right? I mean, you can see it. That's kind of the whole point. But the reason we know that this field exists is because if we were then to create a second charged particle in this empty universe, once that field, come the first one, reaches it, that particle begins to experience a force. If it's a positive charge, like the one that's creating the field, it'll be repelled, it'll be pushed away once that field reaches it. So we say the electric field is created because once it reaches some other charged particle, it interacts with it, and we say that the field then exerts a force on that second particle and makes it accelerate. With me so far, Ian? Electric fields, how those generally work?
So far, so good.
Cool. All right, so let's go back, remove that second charge, talk about just the single charged particle in our universe, okay? Let's wiggle it up and down. Very fun to do. Wiggle, 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 up and down. Who knows what's up, who knows what's down? We'll just define an up and down. Wiggling it up and down. When we do this, the electric field it's creating starts moving up and down too. So what you end up doing is you end up creating an electromagnetic, but again, we're going to ignore the magnetic bit, an electromagnetic wave that also will propagate away from the particle. To picture what this looks like, you can kind of picture those battle ropes that you have in gyms, those big heavy ropes, sometimes chains if you're Batman, I guess, in the movies. But and if you ever use those in the gym, you basically go up and down with them, you're moving your hands up and down, and these ropes start, you see these waves kind of propagating down the ropes away from you as you're moving your hands up and down. Maybe you haven't seen these. Similar to like in the opposite way, like a gymnast ribbon thing, you know, those little sticks with the ribbons on the end of them. Kind of the same idea. If you wiggle those up and down, the ribbon creates these waves that kind of go down the ribbon or down the ropes. What this means for this electric field is that as the wave is propagating outwards, at some point in time, let's say you're standing, you know, a mile away. At some point, as that field is hitting you, it'll be pointing upwards. And at some points, it'll be pointing downwards. So if you're a charged particle, at some points it would be pushing you upwards, and at some points it would be pushing you downwards, right? So those are the extremes that this wave is oscillating between. So at some points it'll be going up, and some points it'll be going down, because you're wiggling it up and down. You with me so far, Ian?
I think so.
I'm kind of visualizing this in your head.
Yeah, I've got a charged particle that is spitting something out, right?
Mm-hmm.
I move it up and down,
mm-hmm.
and because I move it up and down, it's a little, what it's doing is moving up and down.
Yeah. Exactly. And it's traveling away. Exactly.
Yes.
And traveling away at the speed of light. So this oscillating electromagnetic wave that you're creating by wiggling this thing up and down, that is light. And depending on how fast you're wiggling it up and down, that'll change the color or whether or not it's even visible of that light. Right. So at a certain rate of wiggling, it'll create yellow light. At a little faster, it'll create green light or blue light. Right. And in fact, this is exactly how antenna work. If you have one of those classic kind of car antenna or like a radio antenna that's just a big pole, up and down pole, they're wiggling charges up and down, you know, very technical term, wiggling them.
Yes.
At a specific frequency, and that emits an EM wave of a particular frequency, typically radio frequencies if it's a radio antenna, right? And a radio wave is just infrared, so it's a longer wavelength or a lower frequency than red light. That's one way you can generate light. Take a particle, charged particle, wiggle it up and down. The faster you wiggle it, the higher energy the wave is, the more blue it is, more ultraviolet it is. Cool. With me so far, Ian?
Mm-hmm.
Cool. And remember, these particles, we know this electric field propagates at the speed of light because guess what? It is light. That's the definition of it, right? So it has to travel at the speed of light. Cool. So now let's talk about getting a little closer to the actual topic on hand. What happens when this light, this electromagnetic oscillation reaches a different medium. So we're in a vacuum or an empty space. What happens if there's a big glass box in space? What happens when that light reaches that glass interface? So yeah. In the vacuum, before it reaches there, it reacts just like we've been saying it acts, right? It's doing whatever it's doing, wiggling at the same rate, your hand's wiggling. But once that electric wave, again, we're ignoring the magnetic part, once that electric wave starts to penetrate into the glass, once it starts to move into the glass, things get pretty interesting. Recall what we discussed earlier with those two particles, right? If you have a particle in an electric field, it experiences a force, right? It'll make it accelerate. So if you have a field that's moving up and down, 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 periodically, oscillating, right? Then that the charged particles in the glass, because now we're no longer in a vacuum, there are actual particles there. There are electrons on all these atoms, right? Each of them feels a force due to this electric field that's being created outside of it, right? And so each of these electrons will start oscillating back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, because they're being pushed by this force due to this field. With me so far, Ryan?
I think so. Cool. Yep.
So remember where this wave originally came from in the first place, right? It came from a charge moving back and forth, wiggling, right? Therefore, yeah. All these electrons are therefore creating their own electric field because they're charged particles and they're moving back and forth, right? So what we actually have are two different EM waves inside the glass. There's the wave coming from outside that just penetrated in, and there's a wave that's being created sort of as a result of that first wave, but a different wave created by these electrons. And the cool thing is, we haven't really talked about waves too much on the podcast, is that waves don't bounce off each other. They actually don't interact in the way we think of things interacting generally, but what they do is they overlap with each other, right? They'll add on to each other. And so the combination of these two waves, the external one and the electron-caused one, these combine to create the new, quote-unquote, the new wave, the new electromagnetic wave inside the glass, i.e., this original light is not the light inside the material anymore. It's being combined with this light it's creating due to these electrons moving. So the end result is you get a wave inside the glass that acts differently from the wave before it entered the glass. And it's different in a few ways. It has a different wavelength, has a different speed, and likely, depending on the angle you're coming at with, a different direction of propagation as well. The interesting thing is, once the light reaches the far side of the material, once it leaves the glass box, it goes right back to being what it was before it went in, because there's no more electrons in there, and there's no more second field outside. So now you just have the same exact thing it was before. So once it leaves, it goes back to the exact same angle, back to the same speed, as it was before it even entered the glass. You follow me so far? That's a little tricky to wrap your head around, I think.
You're telling me. Mm-hmm. I got a charged particle.
Yeah, you do.
It is emitting an electric field, mm-hmm. which is traveling straight. Mm-hmm. I start to wiggle it. Mm-hmm. Now I have a wave that's traveling straight.
Yeah.
My wave hits a box. It hits a box. Inside that box, now I do have electrons. Mm-hmm. And I am now making more waves, because the electrons interact with my electric field.
Exactly.
And now inside of the glass box, I have waves interacting with each other that I've induced by putting an electric field through it. Mm-hmm. And then it exits the box and just goes back to the way it was.
Yep, yep. Because you can kind of imagine that there's like a field outside, and the exact same field is also inside the box, but it's not the only field inside the box now. Because their field's there, it's creating more fields inside the box. So outside the box, it's the same exact field it was before and after. Inside, it's still there. It's just also there with something else. And those waves combine in different ways, and therefore they cause the wave to do different things. Because remember,
yeah,
it's not like the light is an object. The light is just an EM wave. It's just an electromagnetic wave. Therefore, mm-hmm. whatever the electromagnetic wave is in a region is what the light is in a region. And the EM wave in the region is no longer just the external one. Now it's this combination of the electromagnetic waves.
Right.
Cool. One last thing we need to discuss to explain this scene, what's going on, is we were looking at this one situation with this one particle outside the box wiggling at a certain frequency, right? But since it's only moving at one frequency, it's only giving off one wavelength of light, for example, one color. So maybe it'd be red, depending, you know, maybe we're wiggling at a certain rate that it creates red light. It gets more complicated when we have white light or any combination of colors, because white light, as you might know, is a combination of many different wavelengths of light. It's not just red, not just blue, not just green, not just yellow, all of them together, right? And each one of those has a different wavelength, right? So presumably you can imagine them being made by different electrons oscillating or different charges oscillating at different frequencies. They combine to make white light going towards this glass box, right? So
yeah. And they're just far enough away that I can't tell.
Exactly, yeah. Or even if you could tell, the light you would see would still be the combination of all of them.
Yeah.
So each of those different wavelengths, those different colors, interact with the electrons differently, right? And the reason they do this, I'm not going to get too into it, but it has to do with the resonant frequency of the electrons. Like, the electrons want to oscillate a certain frequency. Some of these frequencies will be closer to that, some will be further away from that, therefore they interact differently. But what this manifests as, these different interactions with the electrons, is that these different colors, different wavelengths, travel in slightly different directions at slightly different speeds, all that fun stuff. What that means, then, is we get the Pink Floyd effect, as Ian so astutely put it, is that if it comes in at an angle, the red light will be bent a certain amount, that frequency, that wavelength will be bent a certain amount, and the blue light will be bent a different amount. So they will travel at different angles through the glass, and therefore by the time they leave, they'll be separated out. So these different colors traveling. No longer in one white beam, now they've been separated out because they traveled at different angles for a certain amount of time, and so by the time they leave and go back to the same angle they were going in, they were going in, they're just separate beams.
They've just been split up.
Exactly.
A lot of moving parts here.
Exactly. So in this scene, as we're described by the wonderful words of Tolkien, the sunlight is passing from the air into the water and back out. Into the cave, right? Mm-hmm. So let's imagine the air is a vacuum. It's essentially a vacuum. The light travels very slightly differently through the air than it does through a vacuum, but it's quite close, and it's certainly a lot closer than it does in the water. This sunlight, let's say it's multicolored, it's white light, enters the water. The electrons in the water start wiggling around because this electromagnetic wave is making them wiggle. Inside the water, then, these additional electromagnetic waves created by these electrons wiggling combine with the sunlight, and they form new electromagnetic waves. They create a whole new thing inside that sheet of water. These different colors inside the light then combine differently and therefore split up slightly as they're going through the water. And so by the time they exit out the far side of the stream into the cave, it's separated out into various different colors. I quote, silver and gold, ruby, sapphire, and amethyst. Just to put it poetically.
So nice.
Yeah. So that's what's going on. There are some caveats and potential inaccuracies here because the sunlight is described as being red sunlight because it's the sunset. So there probably wouldn't be multiple colors inside of it, or at least not a large prevalence of the other colors other than red in it. So it's unlikely they would see perhaps emerald or amethyst. They'd probably see ruby as it's described, right? And also, not to be pedantic, but since the sun is near setting... And they're in Athelion, which is pretty far east of the White Mountains.
Oh, my gosh.
So much so, I might say, that the sunlight is described as being level, which I presume means fairly parallel to the surface, right? Because it's coming in from the horizon. Unless the water is falling at a pretty drastic angle and not straight down, the light's almost certainly nearly perpendicular to the sheet of water. And it only splits when it's coming in at a weird angle. So if it's nearly perpendicular, then it probably won't split very much. So those minor inaccuracies aside... I don't really care. It's a great scene anyway. I know. Yeah, I could go into all the thematic, how this ties into like the themes of the work. I don't need to do that. We're here for physics, not for literature.
It's true.
If you want to know more about literature and how I think about Tolkien,
Tweet us.
All right, Ian. So that's the idea. That's the refraction, this chromatic dispersion, this kind of idea of light bending.
So, just real quick, yeah. You've used both of these words, refraction and...
dispersion.
And chromatic dispersion. Yeah. Can you give which part of that is refraction?
So, refraction is just the idea that it bends. So, light, when it enters a different medium, like glass in the space or like water in the scene, right? It'll travel at a slightly different angle than it was when it came in. It'll change direction slightly. And this is because of all the, interacting waves inside the material. That curving of it, that is refraction.
Dispersion.
That's just the idea that it splits up the colors. So, like, colors if you have monochromatic light, so unless you have just a red light coming in, there won't be any dispersion because it's all one wavelength, so it'll just bend at the same angle. The dispersion comes in when you have multiple colors all together, and the dispersion means that they're just separating out. Chromatic meaning color, dispersion meaning spreading out. So it's
perfect.
That's the idea. Does that make sense?
Okay. I wanted to split up those two parts because they are...
They're related.
We're giving them a twofer, but
Yeah. Okay, so, Ian.
Wow.
There's dispersion. There's refraction. Bending of light.
Love it.
Where do we see that kind of stuff in the world? Spoilers.
I can do a book reference right away.
Oh, there we go.
But you said you wanted to do spoilers first.
Well, spoilers. It's everywhere.
It's everywhere. The big famous one is if you say that Pink comes Floyd to my head from you. A book is not Pink Floyd, but instead it is Hatchet.
Oh.
Hatchet by Gary Paulson.
Say more.
Is a book about a boy who is essentially trapped in the Alaskan bush wilderness.
I thought it was Canada.
Is it Canada? It could be.
I don't forget.
Whatever. It's a northern.
Fifth grade, who knows?
Yeah.
We can't. There's no way to find out. There's no way to know.
I'm at my computer. No way to find out. And he needs to figure out how to catch food. And he makes a spear and tries to go spear fishing. And every time he tries to get a fish, he misses. Well, it turns out it's because of the refraction. The water or the light coming off of the fish is bending on its way out of the water, giving him an inaccurate estimate of the position of the fish. Mm. So it's not until he also puts his stick in the water he can actually catch his dinner. And instead he eats gut rot berries that make him sick.
Yeah, very sick. God, what a good book, though.
Great book. That's what came into my head talking about anytime I think about refraction.
That's great. That's an excellent example. Similar to that is kind of if you have a water glass that's, you know, glass cup, and you have like a straw in it, you know, the straw looks like it's in a different position than you see it above the glass, right?
If you look through your glass, it.
Yeah. Same thing with like shifted. Pickles in a jar looking bigger than they actually are.
Such a disappointment.
I know. What else you got? Any others?
Let's see here. I mean, you do have like the Pink Floyd thing, right? Sure. Like window, you look through a window and you can see like a rainbow on the wall with your chromatic dispersion.
We're not big on jargon here. I just think it's a fun word to say.
It is a fun word. Not to be confused with chromatic aberrations, of course. True.
Which are?
The same.
Yeah. I mean, slightly different.
You go ahead. Yeah. What do you got?
Sure. I mean, you kind of already said one in there. You didn't say it specifically, but rainbows, right? You see a rainbow. What is a rainbow, right? A rainbow technically it's a combination of reflection, which we talked about last week, and refraction, which we're talking about this week, right? I won't go super into it because this would be great for a video or like a visual medium because you kind of need like the diagram to see it. But basically the light will bounce off the back of the water droplet twice and the angles it bounces off at while it's in the water is dispersing, right? So you end up seeing these colors spread out. So that's a classic example of rainbows being the white sunlight split up into a rainbow.
I know you got another one in there.
Oh, I got a lot.
Just so many, I bet.
So many. Well, I get the bonus of knowing what we're talking about before we record, so.
That is nice, you know. Yeah. A little bit of a challenge for me.
Yeah, so like refraction, though, I mean, that's used in any kind of lens, right? Be it your glasses, be it magnifying glasses, telescope, microscope, right? All these things use, I guess some telescopes use mirrors, but, you know, lenses, at least, they're all about designing a glass or some sort of material that is harder, you know, has light travel differently through it than the air, and therefore it'll bend the light focusing it or, you know, that kind of thing, magnifying objects.
Yeah, I guess another book reference
is it
Lord of the Flies?
With the specs?
Where the kid uses his glasses to focus light to start a fire.
Which doesn't work unless you have...
It's wrong.
Well, yeah. It would work if you were farsighted, I think. Because it wouldn't work with concave lenses, but it would work with convex lenses.
We're not doing thin lenses in this episode, Will.
Sorry.
Stop throwing those words around.
Ray tracing will be later. Any other? One we kind of did an episode on way back when that is related
Let's
to
hear
this
it.
Is the Lawrence of Arabia. Oh.
No.
I guess lasers had to do with mirrors more than this. So Lawrence of Arabia, we were talking about mirages, right? We were talking about Fermat's principle, which we effectively just described why Fermat's principle is a thing in this episode, right? And that episode, we were kind of talking about what it does and how it shows you mirages. This whole thing is the reason for Fermat's principle, which if you want to know what that is, listen to Lawrence of Arabia episode.
Got an episode for you.
Yeah, there we go. So that's, you know, mirages in that same way is all about refraction. And my last one I got is you look up in the night sky at night. How nice. What a nice sky. It's nice.
So pleasant.
It's still not too cold yet. It's beginning of September.
Look at all those stars.
What are those stars doing? They're not pinpoints. They're little twinkling little points of light, little pinpricks that have this sort of shimmer to them, right? Twinkling stars. Mm-hmm. That is because the atmosphere itself is harder for light to travel through than the vacuum of space. So when the light from the stars reaches us, it gets... refracted and spread out for our eyes, so we can see them easier and see them wiggle around as the air currents change.
It's a good one too.
Yeah, they're going. Yeah, light curves and it goes through different media. That's the big. That's the big. If you want to know about Snell's law, you can watch those videos we're talking about. Okay, then that. Yeah.
Boom. Very nice. Very clean. Yeah. So what's your? Let's get a clean cut of your punchline. Action.
All of us see because of refraction. We need it in order to have the light bend and focus on our retina and all that fun stuff. So, give a holler for Miles Principle and refraction.
Holla.
And you wouldn't see a rainbow if you didn't have chromatic dispersion. That's the word.
And the most iconic album art maybe ever.
Probably ever, I would say.
Wouldn't exist.
Great album, too.
Well, if you have any questions about refraction or dispersion, or if you caught Will saying something wrong, you almost certainly didn't hear me saying anything wrong because I don't do that. Feel free to tweet us at podcastframes on the Twitter. And with that, we move on to our next section, which is questions from the audience, or more in particular, question from the audience. Every week, we take one of the questions we receive and we read them on air and answer them. So this week, our question comes from someone I don't know at all, at Kieran McKegg.
What do we got, Kieran McKegg? What do you got? Give it to me.
Why do physics people say that everything can be explained by string theory?
Nice.
So, Will.
That's a very
why do physics people do this stuff?
First of all, physics people is a very reductive term for ourselves, okay? But the answer to your question is one that's a little beyond the scope of this podcast, frankly, a little beyond my own personal knowledge on the subject. I'm not a string theorist, but the basic idea boils down to physics people, we like when things can be explained elegantly. Especially if it's going to be nice, one nice clean equation, for example, or a set of very nice looking equations. We like math that looks nice and neat, even if it's describing something very complicated, right? And in fact, most of physics, especially the very successful like general relativity, which describes how galaxies function and how very massive objects affect how gravity changes the universe, right? How it affects the universe. Those are some beautiful equations there. Very short, concise, very pretty. Similarly, the quantum mechanics, there's some very pretty equations that help describe very small things and very low energy and, you know, all that kind of, all the microscopic, subatomic stuff. It works really well. This is called the standard model. It describes all of electricity and magnetism, all of, you know, everything, essentially, except for gravity. So we basically have these two different fields, general relativity, which describes gravity, and the standard model, which describes basically everything else. The problem is, they hate each other. They do not work with each other at all. If you try to tip one or the other, it falls apart. There's a lot of theories that have tried to combine them into one nice, again, elegant thing. And string theory is kind of the big one that most people in physics kind of say, yeah, that's probably right. The issue is it's hard to actually get evidence to say it's right. But there's a lot of theorists working very hard trying to stake their claim and prove either that it's true or that it's not. But the long story short is that string theory is a theory that would make things finally, everything could be explained with one theory, which physicists just love to think about because elegance is nice. Hope that answers your question, Mr. McKegg.
Who I don't know.
Well, I certainly have no idea who that is.
Well, folks, if you would love to hear your name read on air, tweet at us at Podcast Frames. Third time I've said it this episode, so that is my whole quota of reading off our Twitter handle.
We don't have to do it next episode then, I think.
Don't have to do it next episode. I've got it covered for a while. We don't advertise really at all. Don't know how. So if you want to share this podcast with someone who would listen to it, that'd be really cool. Our little podcast hosting service tells me when we hit milestones, which is always very fun.
Have we ever hit one?
Oh, are you kidding me? We hit milestones all the time.
We blow past them.
Do you have to prepare a lot in order to be ready to watch Lord of the Rings tomorrow?
Oh, no. I'm ready. I've been ready.
Hey, everyone. Thanks so much for listening to our episode this week. I hope you have a safe Labor Day weekend or had a safe weekend. Jeez.
Yeah, get your time frames right.
Worst sign-off ever. And we'll catch you in the next one,
catch
episode 20.
Catch you on 20. The flip side.
Bye.